Welcome to the Lynn Rivers Show. I'm Lynn Rivers. David Korn is an author, reporter, and political commentator. He'll join me today to talk about his new book on President Obama and his administration. Korn suggests that what we've seen in the media is not necessarily what was going on in the White House or in negotiations with Speaker of the House. In the second half of the show, I'll talk with Paul Keel from ProPublica, who has investigated the home foreclosure debacle. Banks have foreclosed on more than 4 million homes since the crisis began in 2007, and Keel says 6 million more loans are in danger. Today it's about power, public and private, and how it affects the little guy, that's you and me. My first guest today is David Korn. He is the Washington bureau chief for Mother Jones Magazine. Prior to that, he was the Washington editor of The Nation Magazine for 20 years. He writes on a host of subjects, including politics, the White House, Congress, and the national security establishment. He's here today to talk about his new book, Showdown, the inside story of how Obama fought back against Boehner, Cantor, and the Tea Party. David Korn, welcome to the Lynn Rivers Show.
Oh, it's great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Now, you have written several books. Why did you decide to write this one?
You know, because I had the opportunity to do so. I was talking to some people at the White House, very senior folks. This was sort of towards the end of 2010, beginning of 2011, as the president was in a new phase of his presidency and trying to figure out how to deal with the Tea Party Republicans taking control of the House. And I saw that he had a lot of dilemmas in front of him. How to govern responsibly in the face of very intransigent opposition, how to lead a political party, how to try to, forge compromises that advance policies, how to, strive towards what he would call progressive aims, even if he had to be very pragmatic at a time when the political culture seemed really against him, and also how to think about the coming election in 2012 and how to, set the territory up for that. And it just, to me, it seemed a fascinating moment in any presidency. And if you remember the tax cut compromise of the lame duck session, a lot of this stuff all came to bear on that when he had to, I would say, sacrifice a campaign promise to oppose the Bush tax cuts for the wealthy in order to cut a deal that, in essence, gave him a second stimulus, 2 million Americans unemployment benefits they otherwise wouldn't get, and created the political space for all sorts of other activity, such as repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and ratifying the important START treaty with Russia to keep nuclear weapons to put them to a lower level.
Okay, well, we'll talk about those separately.
But yeah, but I'm just saying. But I started talking to some White House aides about this and saying, saying whether he was doing everything as I thought he should be doing. I saw a lot of drama and dilemmas, and I was fascinated by this. And I asked them, could I, talk to you guys throughout the year as the president and you go through this and write a behind-the-scenes narrative of how, of this very tumultuous time in the presidency. And they thought about it long and hard first, but they eventually said yes. Well, I was kind of surprised, because I thought, often the safe bet is just say no.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no deal whether how it would come down. At that time, no one knew what was going to happen with the budget fight and the debt ceiling and
right.
Bin Laden and Egypt. All these things hadn't happened yet. And we're not even a glimmer. And so really, because I had the opportunity, not to be the fly on the wall, but to talk to other flies on the wall after the fact, that I felt, it was too good to pass up, and so I was able to write a book, which is, I think, very dramatic. It's a narrative. It's behind-the-scenes tellings of all these episodes. We can go over some of your favorites if you like.
Right.
And, it's not a book that, that's argumentative, that's pro or anti-Obama, but it's descriptive, and I think gives people a lot of information for them to reach their own conclusions as they all wrestle with, like, who is Obama? What is he doing?
Well, how much did you have access to the president himself?
I didn't have any on-the-record access to him while I was doing the book. There was talk about it, but as it turned out, there were a few books that came out while mine was in process, which gave the White House the lesson that it's better for the president not to talk to authors.
Yes.
There was the Ron Suskind book, and they weren't happy with the Jody Cantor book, which he didn't talk to. But I talked to, other people, a lot of other people, I should say, who were in the room making the decisions, and I was able to talk to often more than one, get more than one account.
So you could cross-reference.
Yeah, and also talk to people on the Hill, Democrats and Republicans who participated in some of the seminal meetings and a lot of this stuff.
Well, given that you write for a publication that we'll call Progressive,
yes.
What was your access like to congressional Republicans?
Limited. I'll say this. I've been working in Washington for, almost 30 years now. And, people know where I stand on things. They can watch me on Hardball and elsewhere. But they also have been able to read my journalism for all these years and just see that, I love good journalism. I hope I practice good journalism. And that I'm fair. And so, some folks, turn off to me on the Republican side right away. But not all. And so I did have some Republican sources. I would have liked to have more. I'd like to have more, sources everywhere. I did this book on a very quick pace, but there's an account in the book of why John Boehner pulled out of the Graham bargain deficit reduction deal for the first time, which is based on Republican sources, and it shows this tremendously, Machiavellian infighting on the Republican side, in which Eric Cantor was poised to lead a mutiny against John Boehner. And this is all based not on Democrats, but on Republicans, including Republicans members who spoke to John Boehner and warned him against this.
Mm-hmm. When I read that, it certainly was evocative of, I was there in the late 1990s, and of course the same thing, first unsuccessfully and then successfully, was done against Newt Gingrich by his own caucus. So yeah, I see that as a real pressure there for Boehner. Listeners, this is the Lynn Rivers Show. You're listening to us on 89.1 WEMU, and my guest today is David Korn. We're talking about his new book, Showdown: The Inside Story of How Obama Fought Back Against Boehner, Cantor, and the Tea Party. So David, I want to go back to this issue of access and putting this out as a narrative. You write for a progressive publication. You're in Washington. You hear points of view from all perspectives. Have you gotten any pushback from liberals who think that maybe this is an apologist kind of book, or that maybe you're giving more credit than is due? I mean, there's certainly a lot of discontent with Obama in that population.
Well, the book was not written to defend Barack Obama from the criticism he's gotten on the left or the right, but it was written to explain the president, and particularly what he's been thinking in the last year and a half as he's had the tax cut deal, the budget fight, the debt ceiling fight, Egypt, Libya, Bin Laden, and everything else. And so people can then read this narrative account of decision making and why he's making these particular decisions, and reach their own conclusions about whether this is all advancing or working towards a progressive agenda, which the president would argue that it is, even though he's doing things that progressives don't always like.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you one interesting exchange I had with a friend of mine who worked hard to elect Barack Obama in 2008, and then in a very prominent way, and then became somewhat disillusioned, and calls himself an outright liberal, and he was one of the first people to read the book. He downloaded it on Kindle the morning it came out, and I started getting emails from him right away as he read it that morning. And then I saw him a week or two back, and he said, I think sometimes you might have been a little too empathetic in your descriptions of Obama and the challenges and obstacles and dilemmas he faced. But he said, as I was reading this book, I kept thinking to myself, this is really hard stuff. These are hard decisions, and I don't quite know what I would do faced with them. I know, what I say from the outside, what I'd like to see him do, but I don't know what I would do if these were my calls. And to me, that was like the highest praise possible for this book, because I put a reader, in the position of the president, that he could see it from his perspective and could, reach a decision or not reach a decision because it was too hard to reach a decision. So in that way, I think, I felt like, well, that was one of my goals, to make people feel like they're inside the White House and they're sitting next to Obama as he's going through all this stuff.
Well, the thing that I found interesting is that there is a perception out there, and in some respects I held it in some instances, that Obama was a somewhat weak or timid kind of person when he first began to negotiate with the Republicans, who frankly play hardball. When I read your narrative, I see in many respects almost the opposite. Very, very sort of steely, very thoughtful about where he's going. Talk a little bit about his decision-making style as you understand it.
It's very interesting that you had that reaction, because people ask me, you know, you're a better interviewer than most, but the average question is, did anything surprise you in doing the reporting and research for this book? And I wouldn't say anything. I didn't say anything surprised me per se. I mean, I have a lot of good stories and revelations that I didn't know about. But in terms of big picture, what impressed me, or I would say what struck me in thinking about the president, what I thought differently about him after doing this, is that I really think he has this strategic patience and a long-term vision of how to get things done. And he really separates himself from the cable chatter or the political fight of the day as he sort of tries to hit these more long-term goals. And I'm not saying that's a good thing or a bad thing. People can judge for themselves. You know, something that may be too cerebral, it may not rev up your base or keep your side engaged. I mean, there are reasons why it may not always work, you know, in a political context. But he's very consistent on that. And he'll look at the budget fight or the debt ceiling fight and say, you know, we got to get past this for these other reasons. While people may want me to charge against the Republicans, say, on the Bush tax cuts, if I do that, people will feel good. You know, we'll have a down and dirty political fight about the Republicans wanting to give, you know, only the wealthy a break and hold up everything else for the rest. But if I do that, my estimation is that we're not going to get a bill passed by the end of the year, which means 2 million Americans won't get unemployment benefits because they're being blocked by a Republican filibuster. And it also means that millions of Americans who enjoy the middle-class tax breaks and the Bush tax cuts will see their taxes go up, and this could have a bad hit on the economy. Plus, if we fight this out, that means there'll be no room in the Senate, no political oxygen to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell, ratify START, pass the Child Nutrition Bill, have a vote on the DREAM Act. So he's doing all these calculations that are very complicated. It's like a Rubik's Cube, and he's not flustered about it. He's not woe is me, and he's not being sucked into the obvious political fight. Now, the drawback I see to this, if I can give a long-winded answer here, is that, you know, this is sort of, he's doing this a lot on his own, and he's not signaling to his side, to his supporters, what's up. With the tax cut compromise and the lame duck session, that was a $240 billion second stimulus that no House Democrat or Senate Democrat could have ever gotten through Congress. Yet he's achieved this, and I think it was a tremendous policy victory. But he didn't set the narrative of the tone or the terms of the debate publicly, so that was realized by most of his supporters. A lot of people I talked to today still think that was a sellout, and that's one reason they're disappointed with him. So I think that long-term vision, you know, not being buffeted by the fight of the nanosecond, you see there's a certain type of internal strength and fortitude to do that. But I think if you're going to take that approach, you got to somehow still convey that strength to your side. Everybody wants a strong leader, right?
Absolutely. And even the Ronald Reagan said that, you know, you can do anything if you don't care who gets the credit. In politics, you really do need to get the credit.
Well, you do. And the thing is, if you're fighting, people see the strength in that. If you're sort of outfoxing the other side strategically over long-term planning, it's not always obvious as it's happening. You know, should this work out and he wins re-election, it will look better at that point in the game. So, but a fight is obvious and revs up people the way it should.
I want to talk about that negotiation that was so public, which was around the increase in the debt ceiling.
Yep.
When it looked like he and Boehner were going to strike a grand compromise, what actually happened there? How did it fall apart?
Right. Well, it fell apart twice, actually. And there have been lots of stories in the last couple of weeks, for some reason, about the second time. The first time to me was more interesting, and I mentioned it earlier, when the fundamentals of this deal was a deal to get, to reduce the long-term debt issue. And the president started meeting secretly with John Boehner, and they came up with an outline, which was basically Boehner would agree to some increase in revenues, which all Republicans in the Tea Party is saying no to, and the president would agree to some long-term entitlement savings, which a lot of people on the left are opposed to. And he came up with a way of sort of raising the eligibility age for Medicare, but not for the poorest seniors, in a way that he thought would have less impact on people, but would still have savings, and ditto in terms about the cost of living adjustment to Social Security. That wouldn't affect the truly poor, but others it would. And then he would put that on the table. And so as this is happening, Eric Cantor and other Republicans are worried about John Boehner conceding too much.